Explain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. With Mobile's award-winning garden expert and chief horticultural advisor for Mobile Botanical Gardens, Bill Finch. We'll talk about living and growing on the Gulf Coast. Now, your personal yard and garden consultant, here's Bill Finch.
Hey, good morning. Is it a little chilly? Is it getting a little chillier down there? Yes, I suspect it is. You know, it's this big cold front came in. It's going to be okay. Everything's going to be fine. Let's talk about it today. Let's talk about your garden. Let's talk about your tomatoes. Let's talk about this cold spell. Let's talk about what's going to happen. I don't think it's going to freeze for most of you. But, you know, it takes a little thinking about. It takes a little thinking about when the weather's this cold and the wind's this bad. And those tomatoes you put out, they don't like it. They don't like it. But there's some simple ways of doing that. Let's just knock the wind off of them. Let's keep them a little warm tonight. We'll talk about how to do that. But listen, I'm this is really remarkable thing happened to me last week. It made me think really hard. I'm in the woods. I'm out in the woods, and this guy comes at me with a camera. I mean, he just pokes it right in my face. And he says to me, okay, you've been showing us all this stuff. Now, you tell me, why are you so interested in plants? What makes you so interested in plants? And I'm thinking, well, goodness gracious, I mean, I grew up liking snakes and girls and dogs as much as any boy. Why would I like plants? What is it about plants? And so I got to thinking about it, but you know, there ain't much to think about, is there? And I'm at a loss because I just throw my hands up in the air because all around me, it's a world. Look, there's these trees above me. They're the sky. And there's all these leaves. They're making the dirt. They're making the ground. There's all these wildflowers everywhere. I mean, how, you know, it's the plants of the architecture of the world. They made the world. They're the houses and buildings that, you know, inside which everything else kind of walks and stalks and flies and climbs and nests and digests. I mean, they're everything that makes up the world. Do you have any idea how central plants are to your world? You know, you're a gardener and you think, you know, gardeners nowadays, they know the names of the chemicals they put on their plants before they know the names of the plants. That's a sad thing, isn't it? But it's the plants that are central to your life. Do you have any idea how plants restructure the world? I just want to say to the guy with the camera. Do you have any idea? Look, the ancestors of plants, the things that first figured out how to turn light, sunlight, into food and energy, which is what plants do. Do you know what they did? The pollution from those plants, from plants and their ancestors, the toxic pollution from plants and their ancestors transformed the world. The world was just cooking along just fine. You know, life had figured out how to sort of make use of all these minerals and other things hanging around and digest it. It was, you know, it would have been okay. They'd have figured it out. But then plants came along. And their ancestors, the cyanobacteria that produced photosynthesis. And you know what they did? They started polluting the world. The world became so polluted, it was so overwhelmed with the pollution of plants that 75% of the life that was in the world at that time just disappeared because they couldn't stand it. Now everything in the world, everything in the world that exists and survives has to deal with the pollution of plants. You know what that pollution is? It's oxygen. Isn't that something? It transformed the world. It made a world that depended on oxygen. It created a world that that had to learn to live with oxygen and to survive on it. It's just an amazing thing. And you know, plants did it again. Plants did it again. So plants eventually developed these things called roots. And the roots got deep into these rocks that had been sitting there just perfectly happy. Everything's happy. Everything's okay. And then plants stuck their roots into these rocks and for the first time broke up the rocks into many little pieces and released minerals that had never been released before. And all these minerals start pouring out of the rocks and out of the earth, down the rivers and into the oceans. And you know what happened? 85% of the life on earth collapsed because plants released minerals from rocks. Ooh, you think I'm telling you this because I like plants? I'm telling you this because I'm afraid of plants. I'm afraid that if we don't understand plants, man, we're in trouble. We're in big trouble. And you know what? We don't understand plants. We don't understand how important they are. We don't understand. We still haven't figured out that if you're a carnivore, if you're the world's biggest, most devoted carnivore, you depend on plants because everything you eat, I don't care what kind of meat it is, everything you eat is there because it has consumed plants. Plants are the producers of the world. They produce the food that everything else depends on. It's an amazing thing how it all works. It's amazing how central plants are. They produce this oxygen pollution that we all depend on. They produce, they're the chemical factories of the world. I keep saying this, you know, it's, if you want to understand chemistry, look at a plant because they produce more different kinds of chemicals than anything else you've seen. They are masters of producing chemicals. All of the flavors and odors of the world, they're from plants. It's amazing how all of that, not all of them, but most of them, are from plants. They are the great chemist. They're the ones who produce all, they produce the blueprint for all of our poisons and all of our medicines. There it is. You think, why do I like plants? It's like saying, gosh, if I'm going to understand the world without understanding plants, it's like saying you understand the structure of a house because you've seen some sofas and chairs and tables that get shuffled around in it. That's not the house. That's not where you live. The animals, they don't make your world. The insects, they don't make your world. Your cars don't make your world. They make you fat, but they don't make your world. It's the plants. It's the plants. So, you know, it's an interesting thing. I like to think about it a lot. If you're a hunter, hunters care about deer. And I keep wanting to say, guys, you know what deers eat? It ain't acorns. It's everything in the woods. And if deer had such a narrow view of plants that we do, so hunters say, oh, I got to have some acorns for the deer. So I got to plant some middling Japanese oak. In the land that is the center of oak diversity in the temperate world, I'm going to bring some middling Japanese oak in for the deer. It's crazy because if deer knew as little about plants as we did and thought that some oak was going to make their life, they'd all be skin and bones. There it is. And you're a gardener. And you can garden, because you think plants are pretty. That's fine too. And you can garden because you think you need to have a green yard. That's all right, too. You can garden because you need to exercise. That's all fine. You can garden because you want to brag about your tomatoes. That's fine, too. You know, but maybe we ought to garden as if our life depended on it. Because I guarantee you it does. You know, I wish I'd told all that to the guy who had the camera in my face, but I didn't think about it fast enough, so you get to hear about it. That's why. It's not that I like plants. It's that, man, I respect them because they made the world. They made the world you live in like nothing else you know. It's a world made by plants. Hey, we got lots to talk about. You got a garden. It's made by plants. We can talk about that this morning. We can talk about this cool weather coming in. We can talk about what's going to happen to your tomatoes. We can talk about when to prune your azaleas. We can talk about your citrus and how it's doing. We can talk about whatever you want to talk about. Life on the Gulf Coast. Glad to talk about it this morning. Feel free to give us a call, 251-343-0106.
Everything gonna fall, you get down. On your bended knees, I ain't gonna do. I dig no more taters. I decline, I ain't gonna pick no peas. Because everything is on the phone, you know you got to go. I get down on your bended knees.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Hey, welcome back. It's a Gulf Coast Sunday morning with Plain Gardening. Boy, we're getting a lot of texts this morning, a lot of pictures from a lot of people. I'm going to take my time looking through them, and we're going to talk to people. Some really great things. Ooh, there is one beautiful, beautiful, Greg. That's a beautiful, beautiful rhododendron, a honeysuckle azalea in full bloom. Ooh, that's nice. Lots of great pictures this morning. Lots of good questions. We're going to try to get to all of them. I got to try to talk to somebody. Sent me a question. Help me out here. Help me out, folks. I need a little bit of help. Somebody sent me a question about Satsumas. I got flies on my Satsuma tree. Tell me what you mean by flies. They may actually be bees trying to pollinate the Satsuma. So, hold on, because there's no flies. I mean, I'm a little confused about what you mean by flies. So let's talk about it. Somebody's going to have to send me a picture. We're going to have to talk about what those flies look like before I can answer that question. But I can just about guarantee you, I can just about assure you, please do not spray that tree with anything. What those little flies are doing is there's not a problem that you would have with any creature right now this time of year. Almost like a fruit fly, not bees. You know, I think it may be pollinators, there are lots of flies out there that actually do pollination this time of year. Send me a picture of those flies, if you can get a picture. But I can just about assure you that they're not harming the tree. In fact, I'm 99.99% sure they're not harming the tree. Very little does damage to a citrus this time of year, and it's not going to be a problem. I think it's not going to be a problem. Rusty, I'm looking at your pictures. You know, it's. The first picture you sent me is indeed a tupelo. The second picture you sent me is indeed not a tupelo. And I'm going to figure out what that second one is in just a minute. I'm going to think about it carefully. But clearly that first one is a tupelo, the one with the distinctly swollen base. Foresters call it a butt. the swollen butt is that. The other tree is with that bark, could be several different things. I'm going to think about that carefully and get back to you. Greg says plants are like the Terminator. They will be back. You know, it really is an interesting thing, isn't it? One of the interesting things about gardening is that you do learn about plants. You learn a lot about them. And that's a good thing, because you kind of learn how they make the world, and it helps you to understand the consequences of eliminating plants and changing the world that they create. And I don't think we realize how much we've changed it many times. One of the things I like to go back to are things like dogwoods, which everybody says, gosh, you know, what happened to the dogwoods? It's like, did the hurricanes kill the dogwoods? You know, one of the interesting things about dogwoods is you want to know what happened to the dogwoods? All right, here's the instructions. Walk down the hall, open the door, go into the bathroom, and look into the mirror. There it is. That's what happened to dogwoods. And I can tell you why. There's several interesting things. We moved dogwoods into the coast for crazy reasons because we didn't know how we changed the world. We made it easier for dogs to get into the dogwoods to get to the coast and in around Mobile. So by the time you were growing up, humans had changed the forest around Mobile enough that dogwoods had become relatively common in a place that they had never been common before. And that was treacherous for them because they weren't really used to this kind of really warm environment. It was a little bit stressful. Nights were perhaps a little too warm. Winters were perhaps a little too short. And then we started bringing in dogwoods from everywhere else with all sorts of diseases, and dogwoods that were even more weakly adapted to living here on the Gulf Coast. And what happened? Boom. Diseases went everywhere. And there it is. And now you can't grow a dogwood. You know, the same thing's happening to crepe myrtles. I keep trying to tell folks this. And it's something we'll learn to live with. But, you know, people still say, oh, I think I'm going to plant some crepe myrtles. And I say, ooh, you know what's happening to crepe myrtles? Have you looked? You hadn't seen it yet, but it's happening. There's a scale that we've introduced because we've created such an ideal environment for it. There are crepe myrtles everywhere. The scale is now about to eat those crepe myrtles up. And it's going to be very, very hard to grow crepe myrtles. You're going to ask me, what kind of chemicals can I use? And I can say, well, I could tell you something. You could do this or this or this. But you know what? You're going to give up because you would have to apply that chemical all the time. And you're not going to do it. It's just too hard. We're ignorant sometimes of how we affect the plants and the world around us. And that's going to come back to haunt us because those plants, they create our world. They create our world in really interesting ways. In really, not just interesting ways, the fundamental ways. The ways in which we live. That's this thing about plants. See, you want to know why I like plants. I don't like plants. I fear plants. I fear not knowing more about them. Boy, it's been a great week, though. It's been a good week. I've been learning all kinds of things about plants, seeing plants in new places, finding plants that I haven't found before. You know, that's part of the fun of the world. Finding out how plants have made use of the world in ways that, boy, I never thought about before. Finding ways to make use of plants. You know, I had, I found some tasty plants the other day that I didn't know before. They are absolutely delicious. You know, I think I might grow some in my garden. They were growing out in the wild, but just this absolutely delicious little mustard. A lot of fun. Well, give us a call. Let's talk a little bit about your plants. Let's talk a little bit about what's happening there. 251-343-0106, 251-343-0106. We got lots of time to talk about it this morning. I'd like to know what's going on. Let's talk a little bit about this cool weather. Can we? Can we talk about the cool weather that's come in? It is not cold enough, unless maybe up in Mississippi, maybe you folks up around Waynesboro, if you're listening in this morning, and I know some of you are. If you're up that far, you're probably going to get some frost. There's a good chance you could get some frost. It may not get down to 32, but it could be, if it's around 36 and the conditions are right, you could get some frost. But it's not the frost. It's not the freeze I'm worried about. It's that tomatoes and the other things that we've planted out, a lot of us have already planted them out. I mean, most folks who are attentive have put their tomatoes out. But the tomatoes don't like these cold winds coming in. Now, that doesn't mean you made a mistake and planted your tomatoes out. It just means that you need, if you really want them to do their best, it's good to give them a little protection from the wind this time of year. I've seen a lot of gardeners in places that where spring stays very windy. They just kind of put up a permanent screen. It's probably not a bad idea for us. You could do it with any sheet of plastic would work. If you've got a tomato cage, let's say you got a tomato cage. Okay, you with me? You got a tomato cage. It's made out of it's made out of rebar. It's not one of these little Walmart jobbies that aren't going to be tall enough to support your tomatoes. I'm talking about a real tomato cage. Not a rebar, but reinforcing wire. And if you've got something like that, on the northwest side of that, on the northern half of it, and on the western and northern half, if you'll just put up a sheet or a little piece of plastic on that back side, it blocks the wind and keeps it from just brutalizing that tomato. Because the wind has a big impact. It draws heat off the tomato very fast, and it draws moisture out of the tomato faster than it can be replaced, particularly when it's a little bit cold. And so it can really burn. These winds that come in and these cold temperatures, they can burn a tomato. They can make that tomato not happy. So it's good to protect the back your tomatoes. On that northwest side, you don't have to do it all the way around. If you wanted to do it all the way around, just use something clear. Don't make it too hot. You don't want to create a greenhouse. You just basically want to protect it from the wind. Keep some of that heat from escaping, but it can be really effective this time of year. A nice, smart thing to do. Greg, if you've got, I'm thinking about Greg's little garden where he's got a lot of tomatoes. Maybe you just put a little screen just behind them and just unroll something, a tarp or something just for a few nights, just to keep it all, just to block that wind off of them. It can really help. It can really help. Of course, you got to build it so that the wind doesn't blow it down. You got to think about that, but that's one thing to be thinking about this time of year. All right, so let's think about your tomatoes. We're going to come back. We're going to talk a little bit more about live oaks, because I think we need to do that this morning. But feel free to give us a call, 251-343-0106.
Girl, don't lie to me. Tell me, where did you sleep last night? Come on, tell me, baby. In the pond, where the sun don't ever shine. I was shivering all night through.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Through the window, by the window, that's where I'll be come to town. Through the tulips with me.
Yes, just in case you were having good thoughts and you were thinking and you were really on track, just in case, we played Tiny Tim just so you'd forget about it and get back in the doldrums again. No, it's something we have to do on the show. We get over it. We get past it, and everything's really good. Everything's really, really good again. Taxman says the amaryllis are blooming. It's a good thing. Taxman also says his cherries are doing great. That's good to hear. David, we're going to address that problem with AT&T and the St. Augustine. But you might want to call in. Let's call in to talk a little bit about the details of it. I think it's probably something we can deal with. You know, a lot of people are experiencing what Dan is experiencing, which is the yellowing on the tips of the tomatoes. And Dan said he left them inside listening to Hendrix too long. It's that purple light. It is a different thing moving from an inside grow lights to the outside, and you do want to be careful. There has to be a transition when you're moving plants from inside to outside. The light's different, the temperature's different, and so you want to do it gradually. You want them to you want to do it during the middle of the day first, and then let them sit out a little longer the next day and a little longer the next day. That's just one of the transitions you have to make if you're growing plants inside and moving them out. So you do want to be careful about that. The brown on the edges of the leaves, Dan, I'm not sure it's sunburn. It may actually be fertilizer burn, and we see that a lot on young plants. And it could be just a little bit extra fertilizer and not serious burn. It just sometimes you'll get a little bit of a problem. Brian, we're going to talk about those. Don't let me forget to talk about your paper bark, your river birch, which is what I think you got, not paper bark technically, but river birch. I would not top those under any circumstance. Topping them would give them a really bad form. You don't want to do that. River birch are going to find their own form. It is what it is. But I would definitely not top them. I think you'll regret that greatly, greatly. Hey, we got a couple of callers, Charlie. I'm listening. Who is our first caller?
Okay, the first caller is George in Silver Hill.
George, I'm listening. What's up?
Well, I've got a question about what I'm called. I just call it red top clover because it's a clover plant. It's got these little red tops on it, and it grows in the ditch in the front of the house there, the drainage ditch, and every year it comes back prettier and stronger and healthier every year. So I know it's happy there, but what I would like to do is find out what would I need to do. I'd like to harvest some of the seeds and replant it in other locations in my yard. So wondering the best way to do that.
Well, it likes disturbance. It likes disturbed soils. So what you're going to have to do is do more than just take the seed, which is available from lots of places. It's used as farmers use it as a cover, and that's what's happened. You kind of inherit it from an old farmer who used it as a cover crop. It's a European plant or an Asian plant. That has been planted as a cover crop. It's an okay cover crop, and it's kind of pretty in its own way for a brief time. But you're going to need to open the soil up, and when you do that, it can be tricky because you can get a lot of other weeds in with it.
Right.
So how would I do? And then what are you going to do after the clover dies down, which it's going to do, it always dies down about what, May or June? It's usually disappears. So what are you going to do for, so I could tell you, if all you want to know is how to get that clover to grow, I can tell you just crack the soil, remove the grass, and sow the seed, and you're going to have tons of clover. But then you got to figure out, well, gosh, what am I going to do now that the clover's gone?
Right.
So that's the one thing I would warn you about. You might try this just as an experiment, just so you can kind of see what's going to happen. Take a small patch of your yard, and it should be fairly easy to gather the seeds, even from your yard. But if you want to, you can probably go down to the seed and feed, and they've probably got red clover for sale.
Okay.
And just Take a fork and just lightly crack the soil. You know what I mean by a garden fork? The four-tined thing.
Yes, sir.
It's got four tines, sort of like a fork that you eat with, and they're stiff. And get you a good one. Just crack that soil just a little bit. Make some holes in it and crack it. And in a small area that you can manage, and not in a real visible area just yet, because you might make a mess. And maybe 10 by 20, okay? Just 10 by 20. Crack it in that area and then sow that seed and see what happens and see whether you want to do it over a larger area. You'll probably get a pretty good germination. I will also tell you that clover, and here's another thing. since we're talking about clover, a lot of times it's better to sow that clover fairly early in the year because it doesn't like the heat. And so a lot of times farmers may sow that clover back in February or even in the previous fall to get it up. And probably the seedlings you're seeing in your ditch, the seedlings dropped in and germinated last fall, survived the winter, and are coming up now. So you probably want to experiment with...
It gets bigger and thicker every year.
Yeah, yeah, and so that's probably it. Now, listen, if the only other thing I would say is, if you want to make double sure that we're talking about the same plant, and I think we are, though growing in a ditch worries me just a little bit, why don't you send me a picture of this? Can you take a picture of it with your phone?
I can do it.
And
I won't
just
be able
text
to do it this morning, but I can later this afternoon and send it.
Well, and just keep it and send it to me next Sunday so that it doesn't get lost in our system. And send it to me next Sunday, and we'll confirm that it is red clover, okay?
Okay. All right. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
All right. Thank you very much. All right. Good to hear from you. We got another caller there. I'm hearing Charlie.
Yeah, we do. Bubba on Dauphin Island, the home of the Native American Festival yesterday.
All right. Great. Bubba, what's going on?
Go ahead, Bubba.
Bubba, can you hear me?
Can you hear me?
Can you hear me?
Yeah. Yeah.
I was going to tell him I put a B in front of my Bubba because everybody down here is named Bubba. But, hey, that tiptoeing the tulip thing, the only thing I remembered about that was Johnny Carson, and I sure miss Johnny.
Yeah, hey, that's Fred. Right. That's been a while, hasn't it?
Tiny's wedding.
That's been a
while. Getting ready to plant about 17,000 square feet of centipede. And we're not going to sod because it's too expensive sod. So I've gone to Atlanta. I picked up wheat straw to cover over it. We're just going to seed it. But what is the ground temperature need to be before that seed germinates? Do you know?
Yeah, you don't need to worry at all. It's going to be plenty warm on Dauphin Island. And the earlier you do that, the better, because it's even a little bit late because the temperature is warms up so early on Dauphin Island, and it dries out really bad. I mean, we're going to come into a drought here pretty soon. It's going to be very hard. I do not recommend, and I'll just tell you, I have to caveat, I never recommend trying centipede from seed. It can be very difficult. And very difficult to get a start. Centipede is not a great grass for us in the first place. It's never a really good grass for us. And and even on, particularly I think on Dauphin Island, it can be pretty iffy at times. It can fade out because of nematodes and other problems. But seed can be really hard, really hard. If I were going to sow it from seed, just to give you an idea, I would have started my seed on Dauphin Island. I'd probably have sown it sometime the first day of February. Or I might have sown it in October would be an ideal time. So if you want to do it from seed, I would say probably late October would be a good time, or mid to late October, and water it good. That would probably be a good time, be the best time to do it, probably the best time to do it. And then the next best time might be February. Don't worry about ground temperature at all. It'll be plenty warm.
Okay. Well, we just got a sprinkler system in, and that's why we've been helped up, because we didn't have any, you know, to be able to water it. The other thing, I am going to take some pallets of sod and grind them up and spread it out there with it to get a hold on it. And the reason I went with the wheat straw is because I didn't want to put Bahia on it.
That would be a bad thing. That would be a bad thing. So, yeah, that's right. See, wheat straw is a good idea. The sod will save you a lot of trouble, but it's. And there may be some other grasses that might do better down there, but let's see how that centipede does. You give me a call back and let me know how it does. It can be very tricky. Okay. Let's kind of follow that centipede as it goes along. And I'm interested to see how it does.
Okay. All right. Thank you, buddy.
All right. Thank you.
All right.
Okay. Let's see. Have we got any other callers, Charlie?
No, we've been reserving a line just for that one person out there listening to call in. So now the lines are free.
Charlie is so diplomatic about that. So, look, we got lots of things going on, we're gonna talk about them all. Jim in Georgetown, you know, everybody's sending me pictures of their native azaleas. It's Jim, your azalea is looks like it's a hybrid, but it's a native. It's one of the natives that's been hybridized. And I'm not sure which one. I don't know whether it's one of the, it could be one of the Dodds series of native azaleas, or it could be one of the Aromes, which we have a lot around here there, but it's a very nice one. And I assume you got that from the botanical gardens or someplace like that. There's a bunch of them out there, and it's hard to remember all of them. Sugar snaps are looking good. Boy, I am ready to pick my sugar snaps. That's really good looking, Dan. That's looking nice. That's looking nice. Hey, Dan, let me go back to your tomatoes. Your tomatoes are going to be fine. They're going to be fine. They're a little small, but they're going to be fine. Don't leave them outside tonight if they're still in containers, because that is going to be a little bit too cold for them. And so that could be a problem. And we're going to be back here in just a bit. Give us a call, 251-343-0106.
You can take all the tea in China, put it in a big brown bag for me, sail right round all the seven oceans, drop it straight into the deep blue sea. She's as sweet as Tupelo honey.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Yes, sir. Boy, you know, it's great to see some of these pictures. So these big, beautiful nasturtium blooms that Dan sent me. Boy, they are just gorgeous. I love nasturtiums. I love what they do this time of year. For a lot of us, the nasturtiums make it through the winter, and it's really nice to see them start up again in spring. Give them a little fertilizer if you're nasturtiums are looking not quite up to snuff. Put them in a little bigger pot, give them a little fertilizer, and you'll have another good round of flowers through April and into May. And you know, you want to do something really cool? Take a bunch of those flowers next time you make a salad, and you can do this, and then people just get really impressed. Shouldn't tell you this, because I'd like them to be impressed with me, but you can make a mess with you, too. Just take those nasturtium flowers and scatter them on the dish, whatever it is, the salad, whatever. Just eat them. Oh, they're so good. They are so delicious. The leaves are good, too, but the flowers, they're special. They're really great to eat, and they're really beautiful, too. Cryptomarine, you know, I agree. Centipede can work okay. I've seen it do very good, particularly in areas with clay soils. They do a little bit better. The centipede grass does better. Dolphin Island, it's going to be difficult. Centipede can be difficult on Dolphin Island. I get more complaints about centipede than any other grass. But something to think about. A couple of callers. Let's get to them while we got some time this morning before the hour's up.
Say hello to Philip in Spanish Fork.
Philip, what's up?
Hey, Bill. I'm calling from Spanish Fork. I've got a large lemon tree. I bought a lemon tree in a large pot, and had quite a few blooms. And I kept it 2 or 3 months waiting for it to warm up some. And I recently planted it and used several scoops of cotton meal to blend in with the soil, and it shed some of the blooms and has a number of leaves that have turned yellow, and I'm wondering if I might have done something wrong. I've tried to keep it watered pretty good, I might hang up and listen to you. I'm hearing impaired, and I don't hear very well on the phone.
Yeah, good.
Okay.
We'll. Yeah, good. So let me. My yard was bare. Crypto Marine said. He said it was the prettiest swamp you ever saw, and I didn't understand the joke. But Crypto Marine said the swamp was pretty, but the ground was bare where he planted the centipede. So just a word of warning. Let's talk about that lemon tree real quick. So when you transplant something into the ground, first off, never ever put fertilizer, particularly nitrogen fertilizer, into the hole with the plant. You can create big problems. I don't think you did in this case, but just don't do it. Put the fertilizer on the ground on top. There's some circumstances where you can put fertilizer into the soil, but there's a chance with a lot of fertilizers that you can burn the roots. In this case, you probably just kind of wasted the fertilizer, which is okay too. You probably wasted a lot of it because it's going to be below the level at which the roots are going to get. Second thing, when you transplant something like a citrus and you change the light conditions, and particularly with lemons, when you change the light conditions and change the growing conditions, change the soil temperature, you did all of those things, they're going to get a little bit worried, they're going to get a little bit upset, and they're going to shed some leaves. But they're probably going to be just fine, and it's probably going to come through, at least for the time being. Now, the third thing I got to say, and this is very important, if it's a regular lemon tree, if it's a Lisbon lemon, if it looks like a regular lemon, if it's not round but kind of oval like a regular lemon with a distinct nipple on one end, just like a regular grocery store lemon, it isn't going to do well in the ground. They are not good for the ground here. The only lemon that does well in the ground here is a Meyer's lemon. So make sure if you're going to put a lemon in the ground that it is a Meyer's lemon. A Meyer's lemon works because it's not a true lemon. It's actually an orange or half an orange. It's half orange and half lemon. And it has a very distinctive flavor, and it is much hardier. But regular lemons aren't going to take to the ground here very well. There are a lot of issues that they have. It's going to be too cold. It's going to be too wet. It's just not the kind of environment that a regular Lisbon grocery store lemon is going to like. Keep your grocery store lemons in a pot. If you've got a Meyer's lemon, which is a great lemon to have, boy, it is a wonderful lemon to have. Lots of people can testify to that. Put it in the ground. As long as it's on its own roots, it should do pretty well here, and we can go through all the details. Hey, but while we've got some time, let's get to David. David, so tell me what happened, David.
AT&T came and decided they wanted to dig some holes in my yard to lay some new fiber optic lines down. And to do that, they cut my grass up. Now they cut it in a way they were able to put it right back on top of the hole once they were done digging. But I wanted to see, do I need to be watering that grass, considering that we're probably going to end the month of March with less than 2 inches of rain, and to keep that grass from dying.
Yeah, you know, we haven't really talked about it, but we are in the first stage of drought, and it hasn't shown up yet, but if we don't get some rain, it is going to be a very dry April. So very important, David, the simple answer is yes, you're going to have to water it, because you're going to be in a water deficit, and one of the interesting problems, of course, is that you don't want to encourage diseases either. But watering now before the grass really starts growing is a really good idea. And you're going to have to water it. The one thing, if you can get it through this, that grass may actually do better than any of your other grass in the yard. And you might actually see that it turns a really dark green, kind of a funny thing that happens because it's been dug deeply, and so you're going to get that those grass roots getting really deep into the soil.
So does
that help, David?
Deep, correct, which was basically long, not every day, but for long periods when I do water.
Yeah, you know, here's the interesting problem. If they really tore up the root system badly, you're going to have to water it fairly frequently. And because it doesn't have deep roots anymore. You see what I'm saying? So It can't take advantage of a deep soaking as well. So, yes, I think you're going to have to water that. Try not to water your whole yard every day. But that strip, you might just come out and early in the morning so that it can help. Just early in the morning, go ahead and water it really good and let these daytime temperatures and the low humidity dry the foliage off. And but every good spritz every 2 or 3 days for the next 2 weeks, and you'd be fine, I think.
Thank you, sir.
Unless we stay in a drought. Yep. Call me back if you run into any more trouble. Okay. Well, we're about to run out of time, aren't we? We don't have much more time this hour, but we're going to be back next hour. And boy, if we don't have lots to talk about the next hour, you ain't doing any gardening out there. Hey, give me a call. 251-343-0106. Next hour.